Situation Room, right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network with me, Scotty Roberts, Rocky Stucci, over there in Hudson. How you doing, Rocky?
I'm doing fabulous, fabulous.
Fantastic. And John Ward, over there in Sweden.
That would be me, sat here in the delightful garden. Do you know that it's dark? The stars are out.
Well, you do have 7 hours on us. It's 10 p.m. there in Sweden.
I know. But it's absolutely beautiful, and I'm having a stonking day. It's been a stonking week. The weather is beautiful. We've been down to the beach and had a bit of family time in the evenings just before tea, and then come back and have some nice soup. And so it's been a wonderful week. How about you guys?
I was just wondering how Sweden is dealing with the ISIS problem over there right now.
Oh, no. You're talking about the stabbings in IKEA?
Yes. The IKEA stabbing, is that officially ISIS claimed, or is that it's what they're calling
a load of hogwash? Basically, what it was a Swedish mum and son, I believe, in the kitchen department, and two Eritrean migrants, one of which, I believe, has just received news that he was going to be deported. And for some reason, they went to IKEA to celebrate. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's going on? We've got some dicey connections going on here right now.
Yeah. We don't know what the cause of the argument was, but what we've heard is that an argument took place. The mum and son were unfortunately killed. One of the Eritreans was badly injured and is in a critical condition, so I've been told, but also I've read. But he hasn't been charged with any offence. But the other Eritrean has been arrested, and he has been charged with murder.
Oh, well, that's a good thing anyway. At least that's happening. Now, what is there? Is there any connection to any kind of militant, radical Islamic group, or is that just a perceived thing that's going on?
I think that's just a perceived thing because of the standard rhetoric that's in the media at the moment, that people are jumping to the conclusion that this ISIS-backed because he wielded a knife from the kitchen department. I believe this is just one of those occurrences where he just literally lost his cool, flipped out, and took his outrage out on innocent bystanders in the IKEA kitchen department, and it's very sad actually, because Sweden at the moment is actually going through quite a few problems with the migrant problems, and it's one of the countries in the EU that is taking the larger share of the migrants that are coming across from Greece and Italy. And so it only last week it was decrying England, the UK, for not taking migrants from Calais and saying that we were causing most of the problems in Calais. It was a sad week for Sweden in that respect.
And it seems to me that Sweden seems to be a country that doesn't usually have this kind of problem. You don't see a lot of this over in Sweden. It seems like such a peaceful place.
Well, you don't see a lot of it in the news, but actually there is actually quite a lot of, shall I say, violence in Sweden. Only 2 weeks ago, grenades were hurled in the city of Malmo. Automatic weapons were found. There's a lot of gang warfare here. Don't forget, we are close to Russia, so there's a lot of mafiosa that filters over the borders here. And Sweden is, because of its strategic location, sea-wise and port-wise, it's quite a trading post in that respect. And yes. So there is actually quite a high level of violence in Sweden. You just do not hear about it. Don't forget that Sweden, you could fit England inside Sweden, I think it is, about three times. I mean, it's a huge country with such a small population. There's only 9 million people, but there are 100 million moose.
Well, there you go. You know, that's kind of like the mosquito population up here. So, so Sweden's doing okay today, in other words.
Doing tickety-boo today, sir.
Tickety-boo.
And we're looking forward, because we're getting ready now. We're starting our final preparations for returning back to Egypt. And I can't wait. I'm getting pretty excited. I must admit.
Now, that's coming up in what? About when do you go back? November 1st?
I go back just after the Paradigm Symposium. I'll be at the Paradigm Symposium, and then I come back, and I'm straight out to London, and teaching and presenting a lecture at the College of Psychic Studies on Tuesday the 13th of October. And then I'll be flying back, teaching again, then I think it's on the 17th and 18th of October at the London College of Psychic Studies, returning to Sweden on the 19th, and flying to Egypt on the 21st, if I remember them correctly.
Well, that's fantastic. And so you're going to be globetrotting for Gebel El Silsila.
And next week, we will bring the Situation Room live from
Florence.
Florence, the architecture, the piazzas, the women.
Oh, I like piazzas, especially with anchovies. So
I can't wait. I'm going to try and find either we do it from the villa, from the side of the pool, dancing there, or we do it from the piazza. I'll be wearing one of my masks, I suppose, all donned out.
That's fantastic. Yes.
Looking forward to it.
It's your plague mask. Wear your plague mask with the big nose.
I'll give a big shout out to Cara Cooney for you when I meet her.
Oh, you know, you can give Cara Cooney a big hug for me. No, this came from Scotty.
I would say that when I'm taking a swig of coffee.
And then you can regale her with the story of how we lost her.
How you lost it, yes, of course.
Yes.
So,
Mac and me. So indeed. There's a lot going on in the world still. There's a lot going on in politics. There's a lot. I feel a little out of tune and a little out of touch today, mostly because we've got a guest, and we did a little pre-talking with him today. And he's not a guest like an interview guest. Rafael Martinez is a friend of the broadcast, a friend to us, and we asked him to come on to kind of, in a way, act kind of like co-hosty with us, because we wanted to get into talking about some things rather than, you know, tap his mind, what he's all about. Although we're going to tell you a little bit, Rafael served 4 years in the Marines and 10 in federal law enforcement. And in that time, he served in the Border Patrol, the INS QRT, the Federal Air Marshals, and as a special agent for the U.S. Customs Service, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He was assigned to the DEA Task Force and the Financial Crimes Task Force. Now, so we've got Rafael.
So he's already got a file on you then.
Yeah, he's already got my dossier. So if you have a dossier on you. Huh? So that reminds me, it's the famous line from Casablanca, where the Nazi SS agent looks at Rick Blaine, the Humphrey Bogart character, and he says, "If you have a dossier on you." And Bogart picks it up and looks at it. He goes, "Are my eyes really brown?" And he says, "What brought you to Casablanca?" He says, "I came for the waters." He says, "But Mr. Blaine, you are in the middle of the desert." And he says, "Well, I was misinformed." So there you go. That's all I got on dossiers.
There you go. Well, thank God for that.
So in talking to Rafael, who I think is now switching devices so we can get back with him here, and he'll be on with us in a few minutes here, folks. Talking to him this morning, he brought up some things that, you know, I'm not naive nor ignorant. I'm just uninformed. So there's so much I don't know. What I know fills a thimble when it comes to any of this stuff. And, there are days where you think, I know an awful lot because I just talked for 2 hours about something. But then somebody will ask you another question. You go, I don't know. So there you go. And
God. Thank God.
Oh, I think that's him.
There we go. I think we have it.
Fantastic.
Okay, so you were getting feedback before?
I still am getting a huge echo back from you. Anybody else hear that, or is it just me?
I hear it.
All right.
So we're going to get a little bit of an echo from you.
You've got live professional radio.
There it is. Okay. Live professional radio. Remember, folks, don't do this at home. We're professionals.
All right. So, well, I'm going to get Nancy started setting up on the computer here. I'll switch over as soon as she has it done.
That's fantastic. Well, we just introduced you to everybody. And folks, we now have Rafael Martinez here in the Situation Room with us. Rocky's over there somewhere. Rocky, you're awfully quiet today.
You know, did you guys see the video of that explosion? I was just watching that video of that explosion in China.
Yes.
Oh, God, yes.
That is just, I was just watching a slow motion version of it. And that is quite spectacular.
I watched it live last night, and it was, my first reaction was, oh my God.
John watched it right after he depressed the lever.
Did they figure out exactly what caused it? Was it a chemical explosion? What caused this explosion?
They said something within the tankers or something.
Well, according to the local sources, the locals had actually put in complaints to the local authorities because of the amount of chemicals that were being stored in unsafe conditions at the ship, at the yard, especially within the factory area. And they believe that this was the result of this explosion, that the contaminants between the two chemicals came together, hence then we have the explosion. But looking at the footage that you've been looking at now, Rocky, and looking at the amount of light that was emitted by the second explosion and the shock wave that followed it, I don't know if you're watching the one from there where a gentleman's taken it from, it looks like an apartment building, and you see him at the camera actually physically move, and while the camera's actually physically moving, you can see the window pane that he's shooting through is moving at the same time. That's the shock wave that's hit this apartment building all the way over the other side of the river, way away from the actual explosion itself. It's pretty tremendous stuff, I must admit.
What about death toll? Do we have a number on death toll?
I think it's roughly, at the present moment, it's standing, I think it's about 44.
Wow.
It's thankfully, it's not high numbers. But the high numbers of the injured is escalating.
Now, what was the other explosion, then, that I heard about this afternoon? My wife walked by me and said there was Baghdad, that's right, and she said
downtown
88
Baghdad.
People was one of the estimates?
First thing this morning, a truck was detonated in downtown Baghdad, and the initial report was 80-plus were killed in that initial explosion. I haven't seen the revised figures as of yet. I'm waiting for that to come through.
You know what bothers me about all of that is that you got people who are injuring innocent people in order to try to make their point. And granted, I understand what terrorism is, and I understand why terrorists do it. And this is why we have Rafael with us today, too. And these are things that we talk about. Something that my immediate reaction is, you know, laced with some very colorful language, which I can't repeat on air, was... here go these people again, just killing people indiscriminately and randomly. And were they targeting an individual? And do they have any concern with who they kill in the process? No. And so that shows me, no matter what you might get from one of these people, if you were ever to talk to them face to face about what they believe they are doing, I don't give a flying rat's ass, because it all comes down to looking at these people and saying, do you realize who you're killing when you kill? That is indiscriminate. Why should that give you a higher moral ground for what you believe?
Exactly.
And for your cause. So how, and that's just an emotive knee-jerk reaction from me. That's not one of saying, well, I've gone into the geopolitics of it now, and I've gone into history, and I've examined who created them and who did this and who did that and what's what and so on. I don't give a flying, I almost used the F word, and that almost just flew right out of my mouth without discretion. But I was able to stop
myself.
Wash
your mouth out with soap, sir.
I don't give a flying flip. I don't give a flying flip what anybody has to say or who created them, why they were created, what deviation of who they were originally created to be, what original group they sprouted from and became later. I don't care about any of that. Do these people not
adhere to a code of personal responsibility. No. And I know we use that in a way for different things over here when it comes to legal things and things like that, personal responsibility. But why is there no, I don't care, again, who created them or how they got there. The fact is they're here now, and they do the things that they do. And while this is not erudite political commentary on them, it's an emotive commentary. It's one that would say, do these people not have moms? Do they not have kids? Were they not raised to not do these kinds of things? So, and I ask those simplistic, banal questions only because you look at it and you say, you want to look at these guys and say, do you realize what you do? What gives you the right to act that way? What gives you the right to create that kind of havoc and violence? Why should you be able to take somebody's life just to make a point?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're talking about and
that. Let's get Raphael in on this.
Did you see, just before we get Raphael in, guys, yeah, did you see the report that I posted today?
We can hear you. Hang on there. Can you hear us?
I hope he can.
I don't know if he can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. I'm getting a little bit of lag on my side, but that's good.
All right.
It's usually we have to put up with that with Scotty anyway because he's not, you know, he's not exactly with it. It's his age. But did you see the report today on the sex slaves in Syria?
I did not. Not today.
I did post it to the Situation Room. It was a very, very in-depth report, very well written, very sensitive to the young girls who were interviewed, and we're talking about 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds, and they were very, and there was a number of girls that were interviewed, and these are from the Yazis, who have managed to gain their freedom, and it went into very graphic detail of what these poor young girls had to endure at the hands of ISIS. And I'm speaking like this because it really touched me. Usually I look at these reports, and we've discussed this before, and Rocky, we had a very good discussion about this, about the slave trade.
Right.
And this takes it to a whole different level. If you have time, and anybody who's listening out there, if you have time, go to the Situation Room on Facebook. Look up the report that I've only posted. It was about an hour ago, 2 hours ago, on the sex slaves of ISIS. And read the report and take it in. And to all the fathers and mothers out there, if you've got daughters, like I have and Scotty has, think about it. That could have been your daughter. And it drums it home. It really drums it home that we are not doing enough for these people.
Now,
we seriously are not doing enough.
To save these young girls from a
lifetime of trauma. A lifetime of trauma.
And so Rocky's got kids too. I don't think you have any daughters, do you, Rocky? You've just got boys.
I do. I just boys.
Yeah,
that's why I didn't want to say that your boys were girls, right?
No, that's right.
I didn't want to cast aspersions.
Aspersions, even. Here's the thing that I've got to ask about this is this stoppable? Is this just criminal activity? Have you got groups that are representing themselves as representing a people group, yet they're really just criminals? And this is where I wanted to get Raphael's take on this, is he's got some experience with all of this. So Raph, what do you think of some of this stuff and the stuff John had to say and really my emotive reaction to it?
Well, I mean, I guess the first question I ask is, do you think the KKK represents Christianity?
Oh, hell no.
All right.
Are they trying to establish a governmental system saying that they represent the people of the United States? You know, that's what I'm not getting at the religion point at all on this. I'm not even looking at the Muslim point.
It's funny that Raphael brought it up, actually, because they use that in the article as an example that we used biblical text to bolster and support black slavery in Europe and America. And ISIS are using Quranic verse. And they're using the very, very near enough word for word similar verses which have been copied from the Bible to the Quran. And they're using the same verses to bolster the use of the sex slave.
Well, it's any religion. Basically, any power has used religion to rally the troops, so to speak, to whatever cause they want. I mean, we did it. We've done it ourselves. It's no
God is on our side.
Different. And well, you know, when as far as radicalism goes, that's any side. And as soon as you start dehumanizing the opposition, it becomes easy to just kill indiscriminately. You know, what do you think "kill them all, let God sort them out" came from?
Yeah. Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
This is all sides, and the reality is, you know, if there was anything, there's no time in our history that I can think of that Iran or any of these Middle East kingdoms have come and assaulted the United States. I mean, you can talk about 9/11, but I mean, I'm under the impression that 9/11 was a false flag, or it was, you know, we had our Saudi allies knee deep in it, which is why we can't even get a declassified report.
Well, now, do you hold to the... It's interesting because I've heard some of this stuff lately, and it made me start scratching my head a bit because I've always been against, in opposition to the whole theory that there was some conspiracy on the American side at 9/11. And yet I hear some people bring that up who are very common-sensed people. If you remember our conversation with, was it Scott Bennett, Rocky?
Yes.
Who talked about that a bit. And it made me wonder if somebody of this caliber is saying, and Raph, here's a question for you, because you've been involved again in, I want to say, you know, I want to give you an action hero status, you know, your covert ops and all the stuff that you've done, whatever it is that you've done.
It's not that glamorous, dude. It's not that glamorous.
Okay, so you don't have an action figure.
No, no action figure.
That's not what Nancy told me. Anyway, so there's this conspiracy theory that said Bush and everybody was involved with 9/11. And so now there was somebody very credible in Scott Bennett who made reference to, I don't even know what to call it, because I don't think he used the word conspiracy. He said the very real fact that these things go on. And that it started from 9/11 and up. And so what's your take on that? Do you think, is there any credence to the conspiracies that say 9/11 was an inside job?
I think there's a giant mountain of credible evidence that points to that being the fact. You know, false flags for political, pushing people towards whatever direction they wanted to go is not new. I mean, you look back at the USS Liberty. The Israelis attacked the USS Liberty, try to sink it, so they can draw the United States into the Middle East. It's nothing new. Yeah. I mean, we've been doing it for ages. It's just now this is the age of the internet, the age of information. Knowledge is being spread out. I mean, there's always everybody has a nugget of information that fits into the bigger picture. The thing now for the global elites is that now we have the internet start putting it all together as a collective whole. As a guy named John Steele, I think it was. He's a former CIA guy. He did a great speech about open source intelligence, and basically that's what we're seeing happening now with alternative media, with blogging, with you know, YouTube videos. You've got people that are, you know, they're seeking the truth. They're tired of being lied to. This goes back, and again, we've been brainwashed with revisionist history from birth. You know, go ahead.
One thing I'd like to question there, Raphael, is how do we know or how does, from your point of view here, purely because you've stated this, so I'm just going to throw back an argument at you here. How does one out there sieve or filter the information that they are reading, which they have researched? How do they know what they're reading is unbiased, truthful, unmanipulated, and it's not actually disinformation or misinformation?
And that's a good question. The reality is you got to use your best judgment and look for credible, just keep, whenever you hear a nugget of information, back check it. Look for every credible source that you can find. And it's even that is not going to tell you whether that nugget of information is solid or not. You got to piece it together with other nuggets of information to start building a bigger picture. It's only then that everything starts making sense. And I didn't realize I was onto something. Okay, when I first got out back in 07, I mean, I knew everything was messed up. There was something in really wrong with the whole picture. I mean, we had a whole bunch, this whole Homeland Security bit, it just stunk up to Gestapo. I mean, it's just Homeland Security. None of us felt good about it. A lot of people started jumping ship, people that were eligible for retirement that had been on in for, they were eligible for retirement back in, 20 years in, but they're in 27, 30 years because they love the job. And all of a sudden, everything started to change with this reformation under Homeland Security. So they started jumping ship. They started retiring. They started transferring out to other agencies. None of it smelled right. So you went from, let's say, the Customs Service, who had an average experience of, the agents had an average experience level of 15 years to an average experience level of, say, 7 years. It was a massive drain of experience from within the service.
How did the service recoup from that? How did it cope with the lack of credible servicemen actually within its ranks?
It still hasn't. The reality is, when the service got merged with immigration, there was a giant. It's just massive infighting within the services. You have your career senior executive service guys and your supervisors who have carved out their little kingdoms, and they've worked all these years to get their piece of the empire. Mm. Now all of a sudden, are finding themselves being merged with another agency and having to fight for their survival.
My other question to that would be, how was the chain of command affected by such radical change?
What do you mean? I'm sorry, I missed that.
If you're messing around with the amount of service years, and you have senior officers and senior staff, and all of a sudden they're missing from within the ranks, how does that affect the chain of command when you have younger officers taking command who haven't necessarily got the years behind them, the years of experience? How does that affect the chain of command?
Now, there's not a lot of people younger ranks taking over at the top. What it is that you got a bunch of senior guys that were fighting for their jobs. It's the junior guys that left. The junior guys left. I mean, the troops, so to speak. It's the troops that left. It wasn't the senior executive service. For years, they were fighting back and forth as to which way the agency should. Prioritize admissions, whether it should have been immigration or should be more customs. Again, a lot of infighting. They couldn't even decide on a name before it started. It was BICE, Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, but then the Bureau FBI threw a fit because they were the only bureau on the block. So we went to ICE, and now they're going to Homeland Security investigations. I mean, you got to talk. I'm still talking to guys that are still in. They're still saying they're operating under continuing resolution to this day, which means they have no enforcement budget.
I want to talk to you about this whole Homeland Security thing, but we got to go out to break right now. Folks, you're listening to The Situation Room with me, Scotty Roberts, John Ward, and Rocky Stucci, and our special guest host, Rafael Martinez. We're going to be back right after this, right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Sit tight.
Okay, Jesus, no.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Jetta in the M&M Survivor Challenge. The sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red, I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut, the water, it's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants.
Mmm, that does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big hot pastrami available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
I remember a loud noise, and then everything went black.
I was set on fire. I couldn't breathe.
I saw the fireball. Everybody was panicking. I have never been so afraid in my life.
Everything changed after that.
I'm Trace Adkins. I want to tell you about these true American heroes and how you can show your thanks by helping them through Wounded Warrior Project.
The person who went to Iraq is by far not the same person that came back.
I was very isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody.
I felt like there was no one there. There was no hope.
There's this feeling of brokenness, not being the person that I used to be. I had thoughts of ending my life.
Your gift today of $19 a month can help us provide the programs and services desperately needed by our wounded service members.
When a person is scared and confused and alone, Wounded Warrior Project has been there to help them.
The needs aren't going away. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not going away.
The Wounded Warriors that are out there need help. They're going to be around for years to come.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month, and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
I'm able to do a lot more now. I've come a long way.
It's so much emotional healing that goes on.
It's great to know that there's an organization out there who's willing and able to help.
The job of helping thousands of our wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive. That's why your gift of $19 a month is so important. Please, call or go online right now.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. Everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Yet every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret.
And folks, I know that this gets awfully tiresome to hear nothing creative at this point, but sometimes we're in the midst of conversation. After a long break where we're talking about what we're going to be talking about next, we don't come in and say, sitting beneath this serene sky, the broad fields now reposing from the labors of the previous segment. It is with a great heart that we come to you. And we give ourselves to you, and we talk to you in words that will emulate the very words of the Most High during this program.
Welcome to segment two.
And Tom Hanks?
Yeah, you sounded like Tom Hanks then.
How does Tom Hanks? That's the first time I've ever been told, hey, you know, you kind of sound like Tom Hanks.
Well, you did. You sounded like Tom Hanks.
Really?
I don't know why. I like Tom Hanks.
Was it like a Bubba Shrimp thing or Bubba Gump?
No. The one where he does the remake of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Alec Guinness. He did the Lady Killers, the original black and white one.
Oh, yes,
Tom Hanks did a remake of it where they tunneled under the house and into the riverboat and stole all the money. And he spoke about that.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh, I do come to you with my interpretude, madam.
That's it.
That kind of,
you sounded like Tom Hanks. There you go.
Okay, I thought I sounded like Mark Twain.
No, Tom Hanks. I've never heard Mark Twain.
Maybe it was Doc Holliday, pre-tuberculosis.
No. Rocky, have you ever heard Mark Twain?
A green, lovely place.
Rocky, yes,
are you there?
Yes.
Have you ever heard Mark Twain speak?
I have never heard him speak.
Have you ever heard Tom Hanks speak in Lady Killers?
I have.
And doesn't Scotty sound like him?
He does.
There you go. Thank you.
I don't respect that at all. That was complete capitulation.
The colonists win again.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, guys. So grill me.
All right.
I'm on the other side of the interrogation table tonight.
Okay, this whole homeland.
Stick the electrodes to his nipples.
John, everything with you is nipples. It's like nipples or gag balls or gimp suits or... I mean, I respect you. I respect your mind. I love you for your mind. So please, nipples and gag balls.
I just couldn't resist that. He said he wanted to be interrogated. I just took me back. Took me back to my old days.
See, you say interrogation to me, I go, God, dark, gloomy room with a bright light shining in my... There are four lights! And, I see interrogation. You know, you will give us the information. I think of that scene in the James Bond movie where he's naked and there's a bottomless chair and the guy's whipping his nutsack. You know, that's what I think of when I think of interrogation. What does John come up with? Nipples and electrodes.
Yes. It's painful.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, I'll take your word for that. John says, I was sitting there in the back of my garage with my car battery and a set of electrodes.
And my gag ball.
I just wanted to see what it felt like.
You're just a sick man.
Emerge.
Raphael, before we went out to break, you were talking about the young officers and young recruits who were leaving en masse. What I wanted to do was I wanted to see how that affected the ranks and how it affected the chain of command and how the whole motivation within that specific area, how was that maintained? Is he there? Have we lost Raphael?
Raphael?
Did I just say that entire question to cyberspace? I think
it looks like it's...
John, just hold on to that thought and repeat it when we get him back.
So while it's reloading, did you guys see that video of the Somalian pirates getting shot up while they're trying to attack a ship?
No.
Yes. Wasn't it fantastic?
I rather enjoyed it. I watched it like five times. I mean, they just got lit up.
I actually downloaded it, and I have it as a screensaver.
When did being a pirate go from... Arr, you scurvy dog, to Somali pirates getting shot up? I mean, piracy today seems so much nastier because there's no romance to it. It's
all right.
Guys in a boat that come up with a machine gun and they want to kill you all and take your watches. You know, piracy 250 years ago was, arr, we're flying the black flag today and it's a red flag tomorrow because nobody's going to live through tomorrow. Arr. And sit with me for a while, buy me some, but I'll tell you how I got this golden peg leg.
Hey, John,
you know, that's not what piracy is anymore.
Jen, are you watching Scotty's facial expressions when he does this?
I am indeed. I'm thinking Alzheimer's. I'm thinking Alzheimer's. I'm thinking other medical conditions. I think we're going to have to drop Scotty from the situation rooms very soon or just put a stand-in for him. I think this is why we're interviewing Raphael, just to see if he can be a good stand-in.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I'm a horrible radio host, guys. I really am.
There you go. Brilliant. So Raphael.
It's just become an audition, I guess, huh?
I had a question for you, and I was actually asking you the question, and obviously you weren't there to listen to it. And that was before we went to break, we were speaking about the young recruits who were leaving, and I can't remember the gist of my question now, but basically what it was I wanted to know how that affected the motivation of the men who were still enlisted, and how that really did it. And I go back to how that affected the chain of command. I know when we talked earlier today off air that you were talking about the point where there was no funds available and that you were salvaging parts from other vehicles to repair other vehicles and such like. How did this affect the morale of the men?
Oh, I absolutely devastated it. Matter of fact, I mean, there's never been a time, at least that I'm aware of, that where the Border Patrol could have said that, morale was high. You know, they have a great pride within the service, but as far as morale goes, I mean, they know they're getting dumped on and they have their hands tied behind their back and nobody's giving them any support. But what they're not realizing is that there's a greater agenda here. You know, there's a reason why they're bringing in all these illegal immigrants. There's a reason why they're giving them all these benefits, even though they're not citizens. You know, if you look at China as an example, I mean, any protest that goes on over there, if it's in a Cantonese village, they'll bring in Mandarin troops. If it's in a Mandarin village, they'll bring in Cantonese troops. And the reason why is because they don't want anybody that'll sympathize, that can identify with the people that they're crushing. And I think that you're going to end up seeing that. I mean, there was ideas being floated around about bringing allowing these illegals to come and join the service in exchange for citizenship. But at what point will that be used against us? You understand what I'm saying?
Now, I would listen to that kind of presentation. What you just said on that. And my initial reaction, is that the stuff of conspiracy theory, or is that the stuff that we really know is going on? Is that a speculation?
No, the Chinese part is legit. That's real. What I'm saying is the United States government and all governments in general don't just take a finger. They'll take a hand. You give them a hand, they'll take an arm, and so on and so forth. You know, all these little pieces of power that we give them never stop where they're intended to go. They'll always take it a step further. And you need no look no further than the spy state we have today. Within the conspiracy theory circles there's a strategy called strategy of tension. Basically, they keep us in fear and keep us, all stirred up in order to be able to expand the power of the state. And I find it funny because, you know, you look at the Ebola scare, the whole Ebola thing. Everywhere you looked, everywhere you turn on the TV, you pick up a newspaper, it was Ebola this, Ebola that, whatever. But the day after the midterm elections, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Well, yeah, I've wondered about a lot of issues like that, where you see something that's really built up prior to the election itself, a midterm election, a main election, whatever it might be, and then all of a sudden, weeks later, you say, hey, I haven't heard a thing about that since the election. And are these things used as kind of wag the dog scenarios, where we create something, or we embellish something, or we sensationalize something? The government does that in order to either draw attention or detract attention. What about the? Go ahead.
I think we do it every day. I think we see it every day. I mean, if you're seeing something in the newspaper, you need to be looking elsewhere. That's the distraction. As far as the Middle East goes, you guys were talking about ISIS. You know, we created them. I think that's the thing, though. When I first started looking into this over 4 years ago, into all the stuff that's going on, I really wanted to know how the world worked. I mean, and really, it all started with Nancy mentioning the Bilderberg Group. And then I just started there, and I worked my way out. Never heard of them before. Absolute zero nada. And from there, I worked my way out, and I found, I started digging into monetary, how our monetary system works, how the military-industrial complex has been growing, just basically taking over. There's actually, I truly believe at this point that there is a shadow government within our own that basically uses the legitimate government as cover for their activities.
Are you saying that that's operating here now in the United States?
Yes, no, that's operating on a global scale.
On a global scale, yes. Of course, we're talking
hidden hand.
You hear all the time, and I think this is where I wonder if there's misinformation or disinformation, because they talk about, ooh, the Illuminati and things like that. And it's become really a joke when people talk about that. But does something like that really exist on a world scale?
Absolutely. I'm convinced of it. I'm absolutely convinced of it. But the problem is that the powers that be have complete control of everything we see, everything we read, everything we hear, and so they can cover up the majority of what we, you know, what stuff that we see. We can see it plain as day right in front of our faces, but it's hard for us to make that connection and actually believe what we're seeing, because the voices that be tell us, no, that's not real. Do you understand what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
You're making perfect sense. And Raphael, if you don't mind, that's a perfect segue. Rocky, Raphael's just made a perfect segue into the discussion that we've been having on the Situation Room on Facebook over the recent events this week at Ferguson, and the way in which the media has distorted, twisted, manipulated the appearance of a certain members of the Oath Keepers who turned up at Ferguson. And I want to get your gist on this, because you've got inside in knowledge here. You're on the ground. What are your thoughts with regards the way in which not just American media, but worldwide media, and that we're not talking about just Nancy, not Nancy Blair, Nancy websites and so forth. We're talking about media outlets, BBC, The Telegraph, The Guardian, etc. You know, well-known, well-respected media outlets. Right. What's your interpretation of why they twisted, or do you think it was because that was the information they were given?
I don't know, John. I obviously, you knew that I was upset by what was happening, because for those of you that don't know who the Oath Keepers are, they're a patriotic organization. A lot of them are ex-military, firefighters, EMS, first responders, and they go down to Ferguson, and they were down there for the original set of riots down in Ferguson, Missouri, but they were down there again within the last week. And, you know, I got to say, folks, I learned something very valuable the last few days, because you're right, John, BBC and some other news outlets that I find credible were misinforming the reader, because the Oath Keepers were being attacked. The sheriffs were trying to disarm them. The sheriffs were trying to disperse them. And they were down there to help the civilian. They're down there to protect businesses, protect homes, and prevent innocent people from being hurt. And this is the part that bothered me, is that our media attacked them, but you don't see nothing about the Black Panthers being able to walk in, up and down the streets carrying M15s and other types of...
No, I mean, that wasn't covered at all in any of the news reports that covered the Oath Keepers.
Right.
But getting back to the Oath Keepers there, Rocky, in the majority of the news articles, they did represent, they represented the Oath Keepers in that respect. They said they were patriotic. They said they were there to protect the businesses, protect the apartments, which they protected during the riots at the beginning of the year.
Right.
They reported that the civilian population of Ferguson greeted them with open arms, but they also showed the other side of it, as you quite rightly, that the sheriff department wanted to disarm them, wanted them to stand down and leave, and felt that they were inflammatory and felt that they weren't helping the situation. Now, looking on the other side of this, there didn't seem to be anything that the Oath Keepers did that would be deemed as inflammatory. If anything, they completely brought peace
right
to the protest.
You know,
they absolutely did.
They did.
They absolutely did.
You know, the thing too, John, is that it almost seems, no, you know, it doesn't almost seem, it's obvious that they want this disruption. It's obvious that they want this to happen. And the same thing happened in Baltimore, where the mayor of Baltimore told all the officers to stand down, let them destroy it. And it's like they want this to happen. And now you guys, I don't know if you guys know, but I was talking with a friend of mine. She's with the 3%ers, and they're part of that big event that's coming up October 10th. They did a big blackout. You could not get on a scanner. You could not hear any live feed coming from Ferguson 2 nights ago. Nobody could. It's like they did a blackout. They want this
disruption.
That's
the same that happened in London in 2012, in the August of. And the same orders were given to the Metropolitan Police Force to stand down. Those were the direct orders, stand down, allow the looting and the burning and the criminality to take place. And there was a specific reason for that, and it worked. And my hat's off to the Metropolitan Police. I bow before them. Clever little sods, because they allowed them to go ahead. They, to use the pun, ran riot. They looted. And then the police swooped in the day after with CCTV footage. And they arrested every single one.
But do you think
they
this
removed
was-
the entire criminal element from the streets of London prior to the Queen's Jubilee celebrations, and most importantly, prior to the Olympic Games. And it was from a tactical, strategic policing strategy, it was a phenomenal success.
Do you think that's what they were trying to do in Ferguson?
I think that's what they're trying to do. I read all the reports, as you know, Rocky, from your initial reaction. Yeah. I thought, no, I'm going to do some in-depth research now. And I went through every single website I could find. I went backwards. As you said, Raphael, check, recheck, check, recheck, check, recheck. And that's what I did with the Oath Keepers, the Free Percenters. Oh, I forget the name of it. What's it called? Slip something. It's a free worded title, Slip Something. They're part of the Free Percenters. And I went through them, and I was looking, and I was reading all the forums. I was going through all the news articles. And what it seemed to me, because there was something that was the similarity in the police report. There were similarities that were coming out from the Oath Keepers and from the news reports. And that was that when the Oath Keepers turned up, the protesters left. And what was striking about that, what I gleaned from that, is that they were referring to protesters from outside of Ferguson who had turned up to cause criminal activity.
No, they were paid by George Soros to be there.
But I think that's who they were after. I think that's who the police were after. They were after catching the criminal activity that was taking place.
Well, you do remember, and I wasn't being lighthearted there, that there was a big fuss about that George Soros paid protesters to be there in Ferguson, and they were protesting him afterwards because he didn't pay him.
Yeah, I remember. We actually had a good discussion about that. So what are your thoughts then, Rocky?
Oh, I'm sorry. My thought. You mean on the
start over again, John?
No. Are you referring to the overall situation? I think there's bigger games at play here. I think there's a lot of manipulation going on. I'm doing some research. I got somebody coming on in a couple of weeks. They're going to be talking about Obama and how he is. When I talked to this guy, he was talking about how Obama is trying to create this racial divide within our country. And I can't even speak because I don't want to misrepresent what this guy is saying. But I think there's greater motive here. I think it's disgusting that news outlets went and attacked the Oath Keepers, who are good, honorable, hardworking, patriotic Americans. I think it's a shame that our media knocks these guys to their knees while they promote, or they don't create awareness about these other groups that are walking around that are screaming hatred chants towards our police officers. I'm really concerned, and John, you seen the other day, I was so upset. Where are we heading? You know, it's like, and this is where I think too, because I support this movement, and I say that publicly. I support the movement that's about to happen, And it goes way beyond the Oath Keepers here, guys, and what's about to happen. We got something coming up in October, and I have a feeling this is going to start well before October, because there's things that are brewing in the pot right now. That video you guys saw of Saad, you remember that guy, the bald-headed guy, he was a Muslim. Yeah. He's a forefront of this movement. There's a big movement that's happening, and he's one of the big players in this movement. And they're not just so much referring to corrupt politicians and corrupt government. They are actually targeting radical Islamists here, right here in the United States. I mean, they know where every mosque is. They know where every training camp is for people of Muslim descent. There is something brewing here of catastrophic levels. And
I'd like to see the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, whoever they all are, go head to head with Anjem Chowdhury and his gang. Let's see what would come out of
there. Can I ask a question? And this is a serious question. This is from a Brit.
Oh, sure. Just totally disregard my levity.
No, I'm not.
You go right ahead.
This is interesting.
All right.
This is from a Brit point of view. Why hasn't the Oath Keepers or the Free Percenters taken a political stance?
They can't afford to.
A political party.
They can't afford to?
They can't afford to. They're huge targets. Here's the thing, though. They are constitutionalists. And that makes them part of the Obama's targeted right-winging radical groups.
Exactly.
That doesn't stop them from forming a political party, and they don't actually have to take part. They can find people who would take part in that for them and stand in their stead. If they have such a voice, as you're quite saying, Rocky, and as I've read myself, they have a voice. It is being heard by literally hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions. And there seems to be, as you quite rightly say, Rocky, there is a huge growing sympathy towards their cause. They are ultra patriotic. I think this is, they have all the ingredients for creating what we have created in England, an independent party that has an independent political stance that could stand instead at the same time as the Liberals and the Conservatives, etc., and actually garner votes and garner a public, rather than more militarily, but also a civilian understanding.
Right.
And I think that would then go a long way to helping what you have seen yourself and what has upset you, Rocky, with regards to media representation of them.
You know, and that's it, too. And that, I think what really bothered me the most was the BBC article. Because I think the BBC, to me, is on an immediate level, is one of the most credible news outlets that I...
Did you research the BBC article? I did.
You know, I didn't so much... What, did they get it from another... Okay.
Word for word, it was from the American CBS.
So I just want to say something really quick, John, before I lose my thought on it.
It wasn't a BBC article.
I just want to say that, you know, I will take the streets for the right cause, for a patriotic movement. I have no quarrel with saying that publicly. But I do. There's a small percentage of me in my mind that's saying that we're kind of falling right into the trap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing. You know, you hit the streets. You got facial recognition scanners. You have license plate scanners. These guys are monitoring every cell phone signal that goes in and out with all these. What do they call these?
Telephones.
I'm sorry, guys. Hell, they have these scanners now that can pull every cell phone signal out of the air and actually go and intrude into your phone.
Right.
And the reality, you know, everybody that goes to one of these protests becomes a target.
Right. Oh, and there is members of the Oath Keepers and similar organizations right now that are getting extreme death threats. Some of them actually had to go into hiding because to protect their families. And these are people that are supporting the American movement, the second, you know, our constitutional rights, but yet they're getting death threats and they have to go into hiding while everything else is happening. And I don't see anybody else getting death threats, that, you know, people that are burning neighborhoods, I don't see them getting death threats. But because they're standing up against for what the Constitution stands for, they have become public enemy number one to good old
why don't you stand for them on a political level, Rocky?
You kidding?
And Rocky, why don't you contemplate that over the break?
Oh.
Because we got to cut out. We're right on top of break, folks. Rocky is going to come back and tell us why. So you keep that right on the tip of your tongue there, Rocky. And folks, you're listening to The Situation Room with me, Scotty Roberts, Dr. John Ward, Rocky Stucci, and Rafael Martinez over there in Florida, as they say down there. So we'll be back right after this break. You sit tight.
Jesus loves you.
Stop that.
Sorry. The devil loves you. There is no God.
Egypt, the cradle of civilization, land of the ancient pharaohs, where the living and the dead dwell side by side, and home to Gebel El Silsila. Beautifully situated in Upper Egypt amongst the bulrushes of the iconic River Nile and the ever-advancing sands of the evocative Western Saharan Desert, lays undisturbed 75 million years of Egypt's vast history until now. When one thinks of Egypt, one automatically visualizes pyramids, sphinxes, the massive sprawling temples and shrines, the beautifully preserved tombs of kings and queens, and not forgetting the glorious treasure of the boy king, Pharaoh Tutankhamun. Yet very few have ever heard of Gebel El Silsila, a vast complex of sandstone quarries, ancient monuments, tombs, stelae, and now even temples, rock art, and workmen villages, not forgetting Roman roads, bridges, and fort, all associated with the quarrying of sandstone for the past 3,500 or more years. Now, Friends of Silsila brings all this and more to you directly from this ancient, wondrous site, with yet more secrets to be discovered by the team. But we need your help. There is so much work to accomplish that there's more than our lifetime's worth. Why not be part of that legacy? Immortalize yourself. Become the next Lord Carnarvon. Invest in the future. Be part of the discovery and the adventure. Why not come and participate as a volunteer? The Friends of Silsila requires ongoing funding from a wide range of sources, and there are many ways that you can donate to help ensure the continued archaeological work, guardianship, care, and preservation of this ancient historic site for future generations. We need your help, so come and join us today at www.FriendsOfSilsila.com, S-I-L-S-I-L-A, FriendsOfSilsila.com, and be part of the history. And be sure to look up Friends of Silsila on Facebook to join our group page. Friends of Silsila is a registered Swedish charity, and every penny it receives goes directly to the ongoing work at Gebel El Silsila.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, A-L-A-N-R-O-B-E-R-T-S.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad so he can take me to Disneyland.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be bridging the gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you year after year with the very best thinkers in their fields, from ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita DeLuise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel, Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
John, there's absolutely no efficacy to the feudal system.
The feudal system works as long as you are either part of the monarchy.
You just said that you like, well,
or you are part of the aristocracy. And
right.
Personally, I would like to think I'm part of the aristocracy or the intellectual elite, and therefore I would have minions before me.
So, well, so the feudal the feudal system works as long as you're part of the upper crust.
Well, of course, and I'm British, so I'm automatically part of the upper crust.
Oh, what if you're part of the British feudal system? There were no peasants in Britain?
No, there's
Just think of this, John, just to think of this. People at the top have big targets on them. You can be at the top, but you only be there so long until somebody jabs you into the neck.
Do you know, I'm having terrible, terrible visions of deja vu at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. It's your past life coming back and haunting you for all the feudal overlordism that you played for putting your...
You can stop that now.
Did you happen to see what had just happened outside my window?
No, we don't want to know about your naked neighbors.
I totally lost my place.
Rocky, you were discussing. Do you mind if we talk about this on air?
Sure.
This is for the audience. If you have pen and paper. Look up justiceorelse.com, and this talks about a 3 million man march, or 3 million.
That's the sequel to the Million Man March, which had about 4,500 people to it 20 years ago.
But even the rhetoric on this website gives credence to what Rocky is saying. It gives credence to the websites that I've been researching with Oath Keepers, the Free Percenters, and all the other patriotic websites, both in America and in the UK with the EDL and the BNP, and in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, here in Sweden with the National Party, the French National Party as well, in Greece with the Golden Dawn National Party. You look at any of the National Party websites, and thank heavens for Google Translate, that's all I can say. But, you know, you look at this and then you read one of these websites like Justice or Else, and you can start to understand the rhetoric. And this goes right back. And this is what I love about when we have discussions like this. Raphael, we were talking at the very beginning of the show there about the younger recruits leaving, which was leaving the older generation at the top without a basis, a foundation to send.
Oh, my God. Downwards. I'm sorry. I hate to interrupt, but I'm just reading on Justice or Else. First of all, before I even get to the point I want to read here, it's Justice or Else. You give me justice or else the alternative will take place. Well, if you've got the power to do the or else, what are you asking anybody for justice for? Unless you're just really trying to fit within the system, make the system work. But I'm reading on here, and of course, Louis Farrakhan is behind all of this. He says right on here, one of their points is unjust killings. I want you to hear this. From the slaughter of Native Americans to the unjustified lynchings of blacks, the only thing new are the methods and uniforms of the perpetrators. The results are yet the same. Let's speak for the Mike Browns, the Trayvon Martins, the Oscar Grants, the Tamir Rices, and thousands of others whose names go unknown and stop this madness. Why the hell are half of those people criminals in his list? Mike Brown. Oh, I don't even want to get into it anymore. This thoroughly sets me off because Mike Brown, I'm sorry, was not some innocent young black kid out there. Just, you know, he was on his way to do his paper route, but on the way he encountered a police officer who shot him in his back, which is just not what happened. He was a bad guy who didn't cooperate at the time of doing bad deeds, and what happened? He got shot.
Scotty.
Because he's an idiot.
Scotty, he was one of God's children. One of God's children. Rocky, I'd like
to hear... What it comes down to, Scotty...
Yes.
What it comes down to is that there is a minimum... There is a use of force continuum that the police have been able to skirt because they can hide behind the badge. They can hide behind taxpayer dollars to pay for the lawsuits. They don't have to worry about liability. They can hide behind the leg of the union rep. There is no accountability when it comes to wrongful death. And that's basically what it comes down to. And it's not just a black thing. This is, you know, they treat everybody. It's this from the inside. It's an us and them mentality within law enforcement. And I never subscribed to it, not largely because, I don't know, maybe because I started out in immigration and I started thinking of U.S. citizens and illegal aliens. I always thought of U.S. citizens as U.S. citizens. You know, they have rights and this, that, so forth. So I never got indoctrinated into the us or them mentality. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
With police, it's civilians and police. There's the thin blue line. You're not on this side of the line. And so, therefore, there's a different standard for us.
But of course,
there
is an understandable difference of standards there. Number one, when you are put into a populace of 45.5 million people out there, scattered, of course, through all these different cities and different police departments and whatever you have, you are supposed to be there to help protect, serve, as they say on their police cars, to maintain law and order. Now, what do you do when that starts to get – there are times, I'm sure, when that gets out of hand, and I understand that.
That's a huge misconception. Court case after court case after court case has repeatedly upheld that the police have no duty. They have absolutely no duty to protect you. You look at the L.A. riots as a perfect example. They didn't go in there and restore order. They coordinated off and let it burn. The reality is the only defense that you have is yourself. That's why the Second Amendment is so damn important.
True.
You know, when minutes count, cops are minutes away. When seconds count, cops are minutes away. And you know, it's only on you. You got to defend yourself. You got to defend your family and your neighbors and your friends. The cops have no duty to protect you. Their only job is to enforce the law.
Or write you tickets and make money for the city.
Rocky, I want to hear Rocky's take on this. I want to hear Rocky. Rocky, are you there, Rocky?
I'm here.
What is your take on this? And I don't know if you've seen that website, Justice or Else. What is your perspective on this with regards to the Oath Keepers and the Free Percenters, et cetera?
I think my overall perspective on this is that we have these different groups like Farrakhan and his organizations. These, to me now, a lot of these people, they are racist, and they call us racist, but they are just as much racist as anybody else. And I don't know exactly what they're looking for, but I think ultimately, like people like the individuals like myself and Oath Keepers and Three Percenters, we feel that we have become victims of our own system, is that one side gets favored more than the other. And I mean, great example is just what we've been talking about the last 2 days. And they're going to be faced with force. And again, I have a feeling.
Well, that's just what they say right here. Farrakhan says it right at the bottom of their website. If we are denied what rightfully belongs to us, then there has to be unified action that we take that will force the justice that we seek.
And he will lose.
Isn't that the same moniker under which, or the same header under which the Oath Keepers, wouldn't they be saying the same exact thing?
Is Farrakhan... Is he or is he not anti-American?
Well, it does say right here, One of their, right next to the whole unjust killings I just read, he says, the poverty, the hunger, the nakedness, the squalor, the disease, the violence, the hatred, the racism, the materialism, the nationalism, the idea of greed and lust and immorality that and vice that is sweeping not just America, but the whole world says that our religions, all of them have failed.
And this is where I'd like to interject what we discussed two or three weeks ago, Rocky.
Yep.
And that is when I said, and when I asked the audience to go back to our podcast and listen very carefully to our podcasts. I asked the question of you, Rocky, and I asked the same question of you as well, Scotty, when we were discussing this very similar subject, when we talked about civilians, ex-retired military personnel, and active military personnel taken to the streets as militia or vigilante or armed groups. Who gives the order to shoot, and who gives the order to shoot at what? That is something.
Well, that's a good question.
This is one of the questions I really wanted to put to you, Rocky, with regards to the Oath Keepers in Ferguson. And there was a very clear picture, and there was video as well, of one of the young gentlemen who was an Oath Keeper. He looked in his mid-30s, in his bulletproof vest, carrying his assault rifle. And on his vest, he was carrying at least, if I can remember rightly, I'm trying to picture the image in my head now, 4 to 5 full loaded magazine clips. And they were loaded rounds. Who and what would he shoot at if he's got one clip in the rifle and he's got 4 or 5 clips in his vest? That's 6 clips. Now, I don't know the amount of rounds that each clip holds, but I would hazard a guess he has at least 150 rounds there. As a trained military man, he would have had marksmanship skills. Mm-hmm. I would say with 150 rounds, he would be nigh on 90%. So you could say he's going to be hitting whatever he's firing at with at least 130 to 140 rounds.
Well, I got to tell you what, I don't care how well trained I am, I would rather go in having a little extra ammo than not enough.
No, but who's he going to shoot?
Amen.
Who gives him the order to do so?
Well, right now, what they're saying, what they say.
Oath Keepers, are you talking about the other side? That's what I'm not understanding that either.
Well, I'll speak on the Patriot side of things, is that what they speak publicly is you only shoot if shot at.
Exactly.
But why carry 150 rounds?
Because there's a lot of people that may be shooting at you.
Yeah.
That's a damn good answer, Rocky. I like that one.
John, if you're walking down the street of Luxor and you see a bunch of men carrying shovels and pickaxes and so on, there's 9 or 10 of them, would you rather have a clip that has 8 bullets in it, or would you like to have a clip and maybe 2 extra clips in your cargo pockets?
Again, I refer to the podcast probably in May of this year where I actually recited that exact scenario, and I said before I even approached them, I already had them in mind. I knew that I'd be able to take out 2 on my right.
You were already killing them in your mind.
I was already killing them with my mind. I was already that was strategically already
with my bad.
Let me say before we go on to something, is that we see these groups that are surface groups. We see them. They make the media. We're on their websites. But I do want to say that there is organization that's happening that is way far beneath the surface. And Raphael would probably be able to vouch for this a lot greater than I can, is that these guys are some well-trained military individuals, and they don't publicize everything that they're doing. And there is community organization, and that's why a lot of these and they were at a time, these groups were all military, but now they're EMS and firefighters and now doctors. And it is a community outreach thing, because let's just say something catastrophic happens. Is how are we going to survive as a community, not as an individual or a family? And so there are things that are happening that is not on Facebook or on websites, you know, regarding communication, who's in charge. And again, if it's a shoot if you're shot at type of scenario, that doesn't mean that we're taking the offensive, we're taking the defensive in that scenario.
Absolutely. I mean, John, all you have to do is look at the Bundy Ranch situation. you had BLM on one side and a bunch of militias on the other. There were no shots fired, but that's because the cops never shot first. I mean, they stood down. I mean, they're not – I don't think there's anybody that is a constitutionalist that would ever fire the first shot. But they're not going to stand down either. They're not going to allow their you know, the Constitution to be destroyed and for the government to just go run amok.
Hmm. I don't disagree with anything that's being said this evening. I'm in total agreement with all. I just have these nigging questions that are really – I don't hear any answers. And maybe it's because we collectively don't have the answers. But it really does boil down to the point that, you know, this is the 21st century. We are talking about a democratic society. America is supposed to be the seat of democracy for the world, for a global viewpoint. And yet what we're seeing live on both television and social networks and in our, as we've already discussed, Rocky, in our reputable media outlets, we see armed ex-military men take, and if I may say so, and I'm not, I don't want to stir the pot, but white armed men in what is a racially active protest in the 21st century in America, on the streets of America, amongst police officers who weren't wearing riot gear, so it was said, but they weren't. They were just wearing flat jackets and protective headgear. But where, at what point, what is the message that is being sent, not just to the government, but globally? Is it a mixed message? Is there dissent within the ranks of the American people? Is that what America wants to send globally? Is ISIS, for instance, sat out there in their tents with their goats and their bladders full of milk, laughing their heads off, saying, look at the stupid Americans, they can't even keep their own country together? You know, what's the language here on a geopolitical scale? Gentlemen?
I'm thinking about that one. I thought somebody else was going to jump in on that one before I did.
Yeah, I'm trying to piece together what he's actually asking here. Is there a mixed message? I think it depends on who you're asking. I mean, if you're asking the Oath Keepers, the message is simple: we're going to maintain a constitutional republic. If you're asking the Nation of Islam, I don't know what their message is. I mean, it just depends on who you ask.
I think you missed the message. It wasn't so much a question, Raphael. It was more of a statement.
Oh, okay.
With everything that's taking place, what do you think the outside world is perceiving as happening within the streets of America? And especially Rocky, you've been talking about this quite actively over the past couple of shows now, and I know you've been talking about on the Rocky special report as well, about the dissent or the lack of morale, shall we say, within the American military apparatus, and that there is possibly, I'm not inciting anything here, and I hope I'm not shooting out, but there is possibly a possibility of a coup d'etat, shall we say, on the horizon, especially if the Oath Keepers and other such patriotic groups were to take to the streets in civil disobedience. Would the military stand by their side, or would the military stand by the side of the government? And I think there lays the question. And again, as I've already asked, as in the statement, what is the perception of that from a world geopolitical point of view?
Hell, that's a good question.
That is a big question. I also want to know, let's throw in on that big question. Do you think the military that exists in the United States today would ever pull a coup d'etat?
I left the silence from three
Americans. There's been reports of purges of hundreds of senior military officers. And my assumption is this is an extended night of the long nine. we're not just purging senior military officers that might buckle against the one world government, but you're seeing any kind of journalist that might dare to speak the truth getting persecuted or charged under, you know, what was that, the espionage law?
I don't even know what that is.
Any opposition, huh?
What do you said I don't even know what that is, but go ahead.
You know, and you know what, Raphael's right. There is a purge, and I think we've been watching this, the purge. I think we've been watching this happen for, I'm not saying many, many years, but we've been seeing it happen probably the last 8-9 years where some of these highest-ranking generals have been released from their duties. And now there are a lot of people that are currently active military that are coming forward and said that they will not detain American citizens, nor will they shoot an American citizen. So besides this unrest that we're having within our streets, we're starting to get the separation within our military, because it goes against what a lot of these guys have joined the military for. They joined the military to defend this country, not to fight its own people.
I think there's also another point to that, and it may sound rather benign, but I do believe there's another point to the reason why a lot of these generals that you're speaking of, and there has been a number of top-ranking generals that have lost their positions, especially the very outspoken ones, where we saw a number, I think it was a total of 13 generals, lost their position who were in charge of the missile silos.
Right.
That was a very, very widespread, very public announcement. But also, I think we can draw comparables with people like, say, General Schwarzkopf from Desert Storm. We can go back to Oliver North,
right.
Piraeus. We're talking about high-profile American generals who are not just in the public forefront in America, but we're talking about global celebrities, for want of a better word. These guys could easily stand for office, and I think there lays your problem. These guys could stand for office and win the vote of the people, and all of a sudden you would see the likes of, say, Oliver North, Piraeus, sitting in the White House. Then you have a serious, serious situation, because the people...
I'm going to argue against that, John. I think the electoral system has been subverted. There's no way you're going to get an honest election anytime soon.
Man, I've got to agree with you on that.
I got to say, there's no way that the establishment, the global elite, are going to allow us to take back our government, because they've already put the infrastructure in place for us to learn every secret that they've been hiding, who's done what, and everything else. They have it in place. Oh, if we took over, we'd be able to tap into the NSA's infrastructure and read every email they ever sent, because they've been collecting everything. See, they'd be hanging from the yardarm.
And this is exactly why it makes me think that there is a greater plan in action, and we're falling for the mousetrap. I really do. So, you know, I tread carefully on some of the things that are happening. I support the cause. But again, I mean, if, let's say, 10-10 comes, October 10th, and Farrakhan's with his people in D.C., and then all of a sudden you get all the patriots in D.C. and at Musk's all over America, and then you have racial tensions already happening, and there's going to be complete civil unrest within this country, I can't help but think that it's all part of the plan. This is supposed to...
We discussed this not so long ago.
They're absolutely trying to start a race war.
We discussed this when you...
Both sides are trying to start a race war.
They are indeed. I mean, I forget the name of the author of the book, Rocky. You brought it up about 3 shows ago, and we had a very, very close to the...
Oh, what's his name? It starts with an A.
Rocky.
Yep.
What was the name of the book you were reading?
Not Bill Ayers. That's not who it was. It's a name.
It's very socialistic. Very
the 8 points, Rocky, of establishing a socialistic state like that. Okay, who was that? His name is escaping me.
Yeah,
you're trying to describe the Clara Piven strategy.
Kinda, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what we discussed there is very close to what Rocky is intimating about, and that is that there is an agenda behind the more public agenda.
Well, there is an agenda behind the public agenda, and there's an agenda behind this show. Number one, we have to cut to break every so often, and we're right on top of that. So keep that thought, guys. Let's come right
and
back keep, in on
and
that.
And don't forget to oil your fishing rods, especially your Harley reels, because you don't want to land that salmon and find that you have a tangled line.
Well, thank you for coming out, Richard.
Some right more hot tips from John's Fan Fishing.
Jeddah in the M&M Survivor Challenge. The sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red, I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut, the water, it's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants.
Mmm, that does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite.
Big hot pastrami available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
I remember a loud noise, and then everything went black.
I was set on fire. I couldn't breathe.
I saw the fireball. Everybody was panicking. I have never been so afraid in my life.
Everything changed after that.
I'm Trace Adkins. I want to tell you about these true American heroes and how you can show your thanks by helping them through Wounded Warrior Project.
The person who went to Iraq is by far not the same person that came back.
I was very isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody.
I felt like there was no one there. There was no hope.
There's this feeling of brokenness, not being the person that I used to be. I had thoughts of end of my life.
Your gift today of $19 a month can help us provide the programs and services desperately needed by our wounded service members.
When a person is scared and confused and alone, Wounded Warrior Project has been there to help them.
The needs aren't going away. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not going away.
The wounded warriors that are out there need help. They're going to be around for years to come.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
I'm able to do a lot more now. I have come a long way.
It's so much emotional healing that goes on.
It's great to know that there's an organization out there who's willing and able to help.
The job of helping thousands of our wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive. That's why your gift of $19 a month is so important. Please, call or go online right now.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. Everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Yet every move he makes, another chance.
I love the way you talk to John Ward during the break. And you ask him a simple question. It says, from the days of the Vikings, Trodepos across the tundras to the northern spheres of the Irish sea, and they took their maidens, and they did breed with them. And when they bred with them, they did bring in the ginger, and the ginger into them. That's what made the Black Irish the gingers we have today. And this is why Hillary needs to be taken out of office. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, John?
Look, guys, you gotta, there's three books. You want to see what's happening right now. There's three playbooks right now that you can read right now.
Is that the Torah, the Quran, and the Bible?
No,
I hope not.
Errol Quigley's Hope and Tragedy, 1984 by George Orwell, and A Brave New World by, what the hell is his name?
Wells? No.
No.
Brave New World is...
I'll remember it in a minute. But yeah,
not Ray Bradbury. I want to say Ray Bradbury. It's not Ray Bradbury either.
No.
It's something completely different. Anyway, your point.
Anyway,
read those three books.
And that is basically what you see happening right now. You got the 1984 police and spy state. You got Aldous Huxley, Brave New World.
Yes, yes.
Where, you know, you're dismantling the family unit. You're seeing, the push for mandatory vaccinations. There's a drug that Quigley cites in the book called Somix, and basically it's a drug to keep everybody stupid and enjoy their slavery. But I think that's exactly what's going to happen with the mandatory vaccine. There was a YouTube video that got leaked out from a Pentagon briefing that shows they were basically discussing how they could vaccinate religious extremism out of the brain.
Really?
So basically, you're talking about chemical...
We're talking about genetics.
Chemical social engineering. You basically modify behaviors through vaccinations. And
that hasn't stopped. That's been going on since the latter part of the 20th century, though, Raphael. And the genetics program is very well founded, very well educated, and very well known. Anybody can go basically online and find anything out they want to find out about the genetics program. Even California, I believe, were the last ones to. Unlawfully sterilize mental patients in the institutions. Right up, I believe it was up until 1982, I think was the last sterilization, against the will of the patients, I might add. So, again, we were discussing this not so long ago. Rocky, you were on Adam's radio station, and I believe... Rocky, Scotty, we were interviewing that gentleman as well with regards to Georgia's Guidestones and the first or the second commandment of the Georgia's Guidestones that referred to the 500 million. And we were talking about the genetics and the genetic engineering behind that and the New World Order, the One World Currency and so forth, and how to bring that about. We would be looking at genetics and genetic engineering on a major global scale.
Well, wasn't Hitler really involved in trying to figure stuff out like this as well?
Hitler was involved only as part of the what is called in Germany it was called the Arbeiter, and that was part of looking into the Aryan race and looking at the beginnings of the Aryan race. You can go back way before Hitler and Nazi Germany even began in the early 30s. If you look to, for instance, Flinders Petrie, one of the greatest Egypt of his time, still is today the grandfather of Egyptology. He was a adamant follower of the genetics movement. In fact, so much so, he was sending back specimens all the way back from Egypt and from Israel to the Royal College of Surgeons in London for analysis. He even left his head, you've heard me tell this story before, but he left his head to the Royal College of Surgeons so his brain could be studied because he felt that his brain was superior.
You know, I put that in my will too.
Yeah, same here.
I've actually donated something else, but I won't say it on the air because it's rather rude.
You know, it kind of sounds like a drink. Hey, I'll take an Arbeiter.
I'll have the Arbeiter with olive on the side, please.
Arbeiter.
So, Raphael, let me ask you, what do you think the overall agenda of everything that we're witnessing, not just nationally, but worldwide, What is your overall opinion on everything, and what do you see us, or where do you see us within the next 10 years?
Well, they're going to get what they want. I mean, the reality is I just don't see any unity within the nation, much less globally, as to what kind of society we want for our kids and grandkids. Everybody's got their idea of what's right, but, you know, and that division is what's going to allow the global elite at the top to bring about what they want. But ultimately, it's going to end up becoming a neo-feudal society where we take our orders from the banks. I mean, no different than the State Department gets their orders from the CFR and the Trilateral Commission. You know, it's just... I think the only way you're going to be able to put a kibosh on their consolidation of power is to get away from the banking system. You know, the banking system. You have to kill. For one thing, we have to kill the U.S. dollar. It's the reason why we've been in perpetual war since 1970s. We have to kill the U.S. dollar. And you know, as far as gold goes, gold and precious metals, it's a great store of wealth. But it's not practical to use as currency. And again, if we went back to the gold standard, we'd still have banks. I mean, the only solution I can see is really to go to Bitcoin. That's the only way to take the power of money away from them, to create money and control it.
Yeah.
You want a free market economy, go to a system that they cannot control. That's the only way you're going to do it. Otherwise, they'll be the gatekeepers to keep everybody down. That's not in their club.
Well,
it's an interesting scenario.
It's a very interesting scenario. So where do you think we'll be in 20 years?
20 years? We'll be slaves.
Let's bring that, we'll bring that down to 10.
He said we'll be slaves.
Bring it down to 10 then.
Slaves will be impoverished. We'll be, you know, we're as dumbed down and weak as we've become. We'll be begging the government for food, and so we'll give them whatever the hell they want.
Where will be people like myself, the aristocracy?
Aristocracy?
We'll be at the top of the rung, I hope. Top of the ladder, looking down upon you poor fellows, saying, bring me more tea and cucumber sandwiches.
Unless you're already part of the club, you're not going to get in, John. I'm sorry to tell you that.
A democracy which makes or even effectively prepares for modern scientific war must necessarily cease to be democratic. No country can be really well prepared for modern war unless it's governed by a tyrant at the head of the highly trained and perfectly obedient bureaucracy.
Yeah. There you go.
Aldous Huxley said that.
There you go. Yeah.
So Rocky, we talked briefly before the show with Raphael about the perceived, there's a not so much a conspiracy theory, because it's no longer a conspiracy theory, because even the mainstream news are carrying it now, that there is a predicted financial crash that will make 2008 look like a nursery game.
Right.
In this September. And again, I refer to the audience, if you go back a few podcasts, back to actually, I think it was when I was at the College of Psychic Studies back in February, I mentioned about the coming financial crash in September. What do you think the relationship is between the perceived coming crash, the planned 10-10, I was going to say celebrations, but marches, there's a strike of history. I don't know if you gentlemen are aware of this. I won't diversify there. But look up the marches anyway. But do you think there's a relationship between everything that we're talking about this evening and what's going to be happening in September?
You know, I do. And let me note that, you know, I think we're pretty diligent in what we talk about. I am not the most knowledgeable person when it comes to specific things, but, you know, we've been talking about this stuff for a long time before it even became a hot subject.
Yes.
But I honestly do. I mean, if you look at the timing and the dates, you know, October, September, there has to be an adjustment financially. There has to be. There's no way we can be trillions of dollars in debt and come up with some kind of game plan to recover that money. There's going to be an adjustment. And again, this whole 10-10 deal and the separation and the racism and the flags and all this other crap we're dealing with, I honestly believe it's some kind of a diversion to distract us from what's really happening behind the scenes. And by the time we realize what's happening, it's going to be too late, and we are going to be in complete civil unrest.
Well, here's another one. Let me throw another one out. You know, there was some word going out not so long ago that a hacker called Guccifer had hacked emails stating, and basically the email Great stated name. That Chicago. Are you there?
I am.
Sorry. Basically stating that he stated that there's some emails that stated that Chicago was going to be the site of a false flag, a nuclear false flag. Not so long ago, a couple of nukes supposedly walked off Dyes Air Force Base, and one of them went into the ocean off of Georgia, and there's still one missing. Then you have Wall Street, who has been quietly moving their servers and their records over to Chicago. When I add all that up, I mean, Wall Street is sitting on, I think some of the estimates are like $2 quadrillion worth of toxic debt derivatives. If you were to follow that line of theory that you know, if you were to follow that line, you know, if I were to go down that rabbit hole, and I wanted to erase $2 quadrillion of my debt, I'd move it all there. Set off that nuke, and then my entire debt would be wiped out. And then Nancy was telling me the other day how the guy that owned the World Trade Center tower, the World Trade Center, who upped their insurance the week before the 9/11 attack, now owns Trump Tower in Chicago.
Is
it
all
coincidence, or are we adding up to something here?
It's a good question.
So, hey, really quick.
This is where I question. This is where I bring into question the Oath Keepers. And as you've already intimated, Rocky, is there a hidden agenda that we're falling into a trap for? And we were discussing, and Scotty, if you don't mind, I know that we did the recording yesterday, but
sure.
This hits home with what we were discussing yesterday with our guests for this coming Sunday's Intrepid Radio, where we have very, very public organizations which are meant to be there for the benefit of the public, run by the public, to investigate public experiences, investigations. And yet we find out that at the top of these so-called public organizations, they're not public at all. They're actually coerced by governmental institutions. So therefore, I do ask the question here of you free gentlemen, as we're coming up close to the end of the show this evening, because this is going to spark a debate. What if the Oath Keepers actually is a divert, covert government institution?
You think they are?
No, I'm asking the question if they've been infiltrated, and whether other patriotic groups have been infiltrated to steer these in a direction towards what Raphael is talking about. Very credible. I mean, what he's talking about, the two missing nukes and so
Here's
forth.
Power.
This is something that that's been on the radar now for quite a while. And He has brought to the table a very interesting scenario. And as Rocky has already said as well, you know, you can be as patriotic as you want, but sometimes you've got to listen to the intuition. And if there's a slightest little bit of an alarm bell going off, you've got to follow that alarm bell. And I'm just raising the question. It's not unfeasible. It's not ludicrous to suggest or assume that the ranks of such patriotic groups as the Oath Keepers, the Free Percenters, etc., have been infiltrated by government operatives who are diverting attention away from the real cause.
Well, let me say this, because, you know, and I think that's definitely something to consider. Let's look at, I'm just going to say Muslims, not so much radicals, the Muslim Brotherhood, so on and so forth. They could just try to come to this country and attack us, but yet, if they're trying to get within our system because they want, you know, they want to change the world, they want their beliefs to run the world, look at how they're infiltrating in our own government. You know, so there's that possibility of what's happening with what we're seeing right now. I'm just going to bounce the subject real quick because we only got a few minutes, and then we can come back. I just want you guys to know that a friend of mine from the Leathernecks MC, they're an All Marines motorcycle club, he just sent me some information stating that the autopsies were released from the shootings from Waco, Texas, with the, you know, when the motorcycle clubs had their competitor clubs meeting, and all gunshot wounds that were inflicted that day were all shot from a distance, meaning that the chances of these bullets coming from another biker at close range is next to near impossible. So they came from a far distance. The chances are that they were shot by federal agents.
Interesting.
That's very interesting.
Do you think that will become public knowledge?
The judge just ordered it released public, and that's why I just got this message.
Excellent.
So why exactly was our federal government there with the intent to do this? Because they were. I mean, if they weren't, then they wouldn't have snipers all over the roofs surrounding this bar.
When this stuff goes down, we're going to be looking at biker gangs. We're going to be looking at gang members. We're going to be looking at the mob for backup, because they're already used to being on the download. All our communications have back doors. We have no such thing as secure communications. If there's anybody that knows how to operate off the grid, it's going to be the criminal organization.
Right. Which is something that we've talked about, which is, you know, because there's other things. Like I said, that's why it says when we're talking about the Oath Keepers and 3%ers, there's other groups and organizations that, again, I hate to keep coming back to us, but we've talked about this exact thing probably 2-3 months ago regarding motorcycle clubs and other types of organizations that are working more covertly in underground, and they're not on social media, they're not on Twitter, but there is a greater plan, and they also have agendas as well, and so there's so many things at play here that the fuse is lit. The question is how long is the wick?
I'd just like to add here, there's a very, very good manifesto, and it's rather controversial, but I will put it out there. If any of you have access to the manifesto that was written by the one murderous Anders Breivik, that would be a very good manifesto to read at this present moment. Give you all the information that you're talking about.
He seemingly had some interesting things to say in that manifesto that weren't so wacky. What he did... Well, and then you've got to ask that question. Did he know something we didn't know?
Well, have you read the manifesto?
I haven't read it in entirety. I've read bits and pieces of it.
I've read it from page to page. I was one of the 750 or what it was who received the manifesto. And it's a very interesting read, to say the least.
Well, it is.
It is an eye-opener.
It certainly is, and of course, it's completely hypothetical. It almost borders on fiction, but you have to ask the question, if you knew something was going on that would change your whole world and the world for everybody in the world, or your government or something like that, and you knew the only way to stop it was to commit an act of atrocity on a certain level, would you do it?
And that's what he did.
And that's what he did.
And I'm not condoning that.
No, I'm not either.
I'm just saying that is the action upon which he took. It's the same as to say that if you were a time traveler, would you go back in time and stop
Hitler? Right.
Or worse off, because Hitler wasn't as bad as Stalin, would you get rid of Stalin before he committed the atrocities? Would you get rid of the Japanese generals before they started to put their plans together to attack Pearl Harbor? There's so many different scenarios that you can look at within our history. And as I've said many times before, you must know your history if you're to know where we're heading. To deny one's history is to deny one's future.
And I absolutely agree with you on that.
I really
John, are you opening up a pack of cigarettes over there again?
No, it's not me, actually. This time it's Raphael. Okay. You can slap his wrist.
Oh, gotcha.
Are you opening the new Harley 5-speed fly reel for trout fishing?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, excellent. So
that's what he was
excellent.
Doing. He wanted to show it off to our listeners.
Is that the one with the teak handle or the one with the stainless steel handle for smooth action?
Mine's bamboo.
You guys are killing me, man. You guys are killing me.
Rocky, you've gone very quiet. Are you readjusting your chakras?
I am, and I was also thinking that maybe we should start a gang.
Oh, I'm all for it.
We can call ourselves the Tiddlywinks or the Nipple Gang.
I think we should be the Nipple Gang. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, the Nipple Gang. Oh. We're hard and turgid.
He says we're hard.
Turgid is a good word. That's a word I hear associated with most gangs out there today. Yo, we're turgid. It's like, oh, okay.
We could call ourselves the Arbenabers.
The Arbenabers. And we drink Hefeweizen.
And we could have little short, very tight shorts and very, very tall socks and brown shirts.
And rollerblades.
And wear and dye our hair blonde. Well, you are almost there, Scotty, but it's really white, isn't it? But you know,
it's very blondish. White. Yes, it's much more white than blonde. Thank you for that.
Well, any other subjects you want to hit before we go off, guys?
I was still stuck on the name. I wanted to call us the Hooligans. I think that's a good name. The Turgid Hooligans. There you go. It's almost like a band.
I think we've hit some very interesting subjects this evening.
I think we have. And I think the conversation could go on and on and on, except we're going to wear each other out. So I think today we're probably done with heavy-handed topics. And I do wish Sarah Soderlund was here, though, to do a little psychoanalysis on John. And perhaps after Rocky reached through the mic and strangled him, a little forensic psychology on Rocky.
There's nothing wrong with Hillary Clinton. She should be the next president. Hurrah, 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 hurrah.
Oh, see, I'm not even falling for it now. Now it's contrived. Now you're just trying to think you're going to get me. Think you're going to get me, and you're not.
Hey, Raphael.
And I apologize again for what happened at the beginning of the show, guys.
Ah, who cares? Yeah. We're all here. We've been here for 2 hours. We did it. Look at that. Okay. I don't care. Stuff happens all the time.
We've entertained the masses. We've ironed out the wrinkles. And we've put pay to the world.
And John has let everybody know.
Did I hear my name?
You did.
Good evening, darling Sarah. How are you, my darling?
Don't listen to him, Sarah, because if he had his way...
Hillary Clinton would be in office. I heard that. Hillary I've been Clinton. Listening. I've been listening.
And he also would see himself as the aristocracy in a feudal system to suppress the...
But
Sarah would be
is a big
me.
Part of government. And I would only hope that an educated person would be in office because that would be
She's
new.
Feeding him. She's feeding him.
I'm not feeding him. We have to stick together. Us.
There you go, Sarah. You're so
us
lovely.
Psychopathic people. We have to stick together.
Oh. Yeah. May the sun shine upon you always, Sarah, my darling.
See, I envision myself as being completely apart from that feudalistic system.
Why? You're a part of it.
I am the strider. There you go.
You're just a pauper. Stride. I'd have you digging up peat or turf.
Oh, yeah. How do you know he's a king?
Talking of which, Big Nose. I'm sorry, I mean Rocky.
Yes.
Is there anything else you wanted to bring to the table before we go out, Rocky?
No, I do want to thank Raphael for coming on, though.
I do, too.
Yeah.
Anytime, gentlemen, anytime. Again, you know, my first time. You guys took my cherry. Congratulations.
Nice.
Yeah, baby.
Fantastic.
Did you enjoy the election?
Nancy's like, Nancy's, Horrible mental image, right?
We and
yeah, no, I had a good time. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
It was fantastic. Right?
It was
Thank
great
you very
having
much.
You.
I, you I enjoyed free grown men together talking about nipples and electrodes.
Oh, John. John.
I swear, sitting there, he's just waiting for the show to end because he got a little car battery, like a motorcycle battery, underneath his desk with little electrodes on it.
Yeah.
And he's ready to just give her a test. Give her a test zap.
Yeah, baby. Bring it on.
And also, folks, I do want to say, if you enjoyed the goodliness of today, that is today's Situation Room, and if you enjoy Sarah Soderlund, who's coming up with Mysteries of the Mind right after this, come to the Paradigm Symposium. You're going to see a huge EBN, a huge Situation Room, a huge Mysteries of the Mind, a huge IPBN radio display there, and we're going to do shows live from there. You can come and join us in the studio audience, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you don't have your tickets for the Paradigm Symposium, go to ParadigmSymposium.com.
Boom.
Bada bing. Bada bing.
Bada bing. Bada bing.
Yes.
That's it. We're done.
That's it. We can go home now.
We can go home.
It was a great show. As I'm listening, I'm always terribly interested to know, like, when you guys were mentioning the manifesto and, like, government authorities and saying, you know, this is such an interesting perspective that we don't condone organized crime. This was very interesting. And I'm always, I want to know what specifically.
I condone it. I condone it. I'm okay with it.
Well, that's because you take people's kneecaps and put concrete
right.
shoes on them.
Kneecap them to the floor.
But have you heard Rocky's new way of interrogating people is puts a budgerigar down their throat.
I'm all about waterboarding too.
What? A budgerigar?
Yeah. Budgerigar. A bird. You know, his cockatiel things. Those feathery things he keeps.
Oh. Why don't you just say bird?
20 seconds, guys.
Budgerigar?
Budgerigar.
Take us out, Scotty.
Budgerigar, Donnie.
Take us out, Scotty. Oh, I thought we were done already. Folks, thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Situation Room with Rocky, John, and
me.
And our special guest host today, Rafael Martinez. And
he replaces Scotty later on.
Yes, this was not an accident. We'll be back next Thursday at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time, and also Sunday starting at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time with the Vixen's Vault, Nancy Planetta, followed at 8 o'clock. Rocky Stucci's EBN Special Report. Special Report. Special Report. Sarah, you're a mom. You should know what that is. And again, of course, at 9 p.m. with the Intrepid radio program. All Central Standard Time, right here in the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.
Bam.
Say goodnight, John.
We took
goodnight,
it all John. The way to the end of the song. All right. All right. We're out.